It is Tuesday, March 1st, Universal Time, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. Coming up, it's the biggest day of the U.S. presidential race so far. We'll talk to our national correspondent about whether Super Tuesday may finally tell us who the Republican and Democratic nominees for president will be. We'll take you to Greece, where migrants and refugees are becoming stranded as neighboring European countries block them from entering. An economist tells us why new data on Chinese manufacturing reflects a serious slowdown of the world's second biggest economy. And we'll introduce you to a Thai fireman trying to rid his nation's capital of venomous snakes. It's all ahead on International Edition. Republican Donald Trump and Democrat Hillary Clinton are hoping to move a big step closer to winning their party's nominations for this November's U.S. presidential election as Americans vote in a wide range of nominating contests. Nearly a quarter of the delegates to Republican and Democratic Party nominating conventions in July are at stake in what is known here as Super Tuesday. Our national correspondent Jim Malone is following the Super Tuesday races and joins me in the studio. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Michael.
So Donald Trump is expected to do pretty well on Super Tuesday, although the establishment of the Republican Party is quite worried about that, and there seems to be a rebellion brewing. What can you tell us about that?
Well, just today, as we have Donald Trump on the verge of moving much closer to the Republican nomination, he's leading in most of the states that are voting today, and it's extraordinary what's going on right now. We have the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, today speaking out against anyone who invokes bigotry. This is a reference, of course, to Trump getting himself tangled in with David Duke and the Ku Klux Klan.
It was a clear reference.
Yeah, but he's not yet sort of, for a lot of people, disavowed to the extent they'd like to see any kind of support for that. Not only do we have the Speaker of the House speaking about this, the leader of the Senate Republicans, Mitch McConnell, also spoke out about this today, saying that Senate Republicans condemn David Duke, the KKK, and racism. Look, this is an amazing situation right now, because what it shows is the party establishment continues to have very little control over this nomination process. Donald Trump is expected to do quite well in a number of states, despite their concerns today.
There's so much talk in the U.S. media about how this could signal the implosion of the Republican Party, or even the end of the party as we know it. Based on your long experience of U.S. politics, do you think that might be
a little
too
dramatic? Well, I
wouldn't
go that far yet. Yeah, that's too dramatic. But let's say this. There are tremendous strains right now. At the very moment you have someone moving toward the nomination, there are any number of other senators and congressional leaders around the country expressing reservations about Donald Trump. And, you know, on the other hand, on the Democratic side, you know, we may see history in the making. For the first time, a woman candidate may move very, very close to capturing her party's nomination. That's something we've never seen in American history, and we need to keep that perspective in mind as well.
And what about the prospects for Bernie Sanders on Super Tuesday? How well does he have to do to stay in this race, or do you think people are writing him off?
No, I mean, Hillary Clinton is strong in a number of southern states. It's the dynamic we saw on Saturday in South Carolina, thanks to African-American voters. That pattern will likely repeat in places like Georgia, Tennessee, and Virginia. That puts Sanders sort of behind the eight ball, so to speak. He's looking to smaller states like Minnesota, Colorado, maybe Massachusetts to have a breakthrough, but it shows the strength of the Clinton campaign moving forward. Sanders is going to have to find a way to be more competitive with minority voters because they are so important within the Democratic Party. If he can't, she's going to continue to pull away. It may not be settled for a while, but she clearly could have a big lead.
Do you think it's time for us to start talking about the prospects of a Clinton versus Trump contest, and how do you think that could pan out?
Well, certainly if the results, you know, conform tonight to what the predictions in the polls say, yes, we'd be moving a lot closer to that kind of reality. And I just saw a poll that showed Hillary Clinton beating him by about 12 points. This is another reason why a lot of Republicans have heartburn in Washington and elsewhere around the country. Yeah. So this extraordinary drama is playing out in front of our eyes, and it's really something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and some polls also show a slightly tighter race, but in any rate, Trump would like to think he's the strongest person to take on Hillary, but we'll have to see what the voters decide.
Well, nobody believed that Trump would ever win the Republican nomination, so all bets perhaps are off for the general election as well. We'll just have to let it play out.
And even the possibility of a third candidate coming into the race, there's some talk of that too.
One of the Republican senators who doesn't care for Donald Trump has raised that possibility. I'm not surprised if others also start to think about that, because a lot of Republicans may decide they won't vote for Donald Trump. His argument, Trump's argument, is he's pulling in independents and even some Democrats to support him, so we'll see where that goes.
It really would be uncharted territory if we get to that point. But
yes,
thank you
would.
So much, Jim Malone, our national correspondent, for updating us on Super Tuesday. Well, as usual, we have our G. Abby Lee with us in the studio as well to bring us the social media perspective on that story. Hi, G.
Hi, Michael.
Well, what do you have for us today on Super Tuesday?
So the trending hashtag today all over the nation is surprise, surprise, hashtag Super Tuesday. And when you use that hashtag on Twitter, a little hat graphic appears next to that word. So to briefly explain what the day is about, 13 states and one territory are holding primary elections and caucuses. And Super Tuesday is important because the candidates who win on Super Tuesday tend to go on to win their party's nomination.
Right, well, what are some of the topics that people are discussing online in relation to Super Tuesday?
Well, for that, we can turn to an infographic made by American TV station ABC. Its Sunday morning show this week showed a list of the 10 most discussed topics on Facebook in the participating states and territory. So first on the list is race and discrimination, followed by Christianity and guns. Other topics include immigration, Benghazi, education, and Muslims. The Benghazi issue, of course, is only pertaining to the Democratic contender Hillary Clinton.
Well, the Benghazi controversy did resurface last weekend. Can you explain that for us?
Sure. So Hillary Clinton's husband, former President Bill Clinton, engaged in a heated back and forth with a military veteran about the Benghazi attacks during a campaign event last weekend. The 2012 terror attacks happened under Hillary Clinton's leadership as a Secretary of State, and four Americans died in the attack.
Right, she did say that she did her best to try to keep those Americans safe, but you all know that four Americans tragically were killed. Well, changing gear a bit, what is the buzz on the Republican side of this race?
Its leading contender Donald Trump's tardy response to KKK support is having ripple effects, and many prominent GOP members are trying to contain that. Like Jim said earlier, Speaker Paul Ryan, at Speaker Ryan, tweeted, "This is a party of Lincoln," referring to the former president. "We believe all people are equal in the eyes of God and our government." Also, a farmer in Ohio is making the headlines this afternoon for using manure from his 15 cows and bulls to spell out a message on his land. The large letter spelled out, "No Trump." That's all for me today.
Oh, my. Well, thank you so much, G, for updating us on Super Tuesday. You can follow G on Twitter, at G Abby Lee. And I'm there as well. My handle is at Michael_Lippin. And you can find our show on Twitter as well. The handle is at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
Celiac disease is an inheritable autoimmune disorder where the ingestion of gluten leads to damage in the small intestine. It affects 1 in 100 people worldwide. Gluten is a protein found in wheat, barley, and rye, and people who are allergic to it must always avoid it. But knowing what foods contain gluten is not always clear. And that's why Shireen Yates of Sensor Labs developed this $200 portable food tester.
You can actually hear the crunching as we put it through.
As Yates puts the pocket-sized tester to work, up comes a result, a frowny face icon indicating that this snack food does in fact contain gluten.
1 out of 5 of the gluten-free dishes that we're testing out in restaurants are coming back positive for gluten.
Peanuts pose another serious allergy threat to some people, and Yates' company is working on a portable tester for them as well. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
I'm Michael Lippin, and you're listening to VOA's International Edition. Well, staying with U.S. politics, the biggest presidential nominating contest of Super Tuesday is in the southern U.S. state of Texas, which offers the highest number of delegates to the presidential contenders. Our correspondent Greg Flakes is in Houston, Texas, and spoke about the Republican battle for the state with International Edition's Susan Yaki.
Well, this is a really make it or break it state for Senator Ted Cruz. This is his home turf, and the polls do show him slightly ahead, although some of them show Trump coming pretty close, and so there's the chance that Trump might win, or at least come so close to Cruz in his home state that it would be somewhat embarrassing.
What is the political atmosphere there, would you say? A liberal, conservative, ready for change?
Well, I think the latter category would describe both parties in a way, because this is an unusual year in which you have a sort of insurgent candidate on the Democratic side, Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont. And then on the Republican side, you have at least two or three people who have been seen as the outsiders, the outsider, the candidate who bases the campaign wholly on coming into Washington and just shaking everything up.
How does the state traditionally lean?
Well, in the case of the Republicans, the state has really become very conservative. The Tea Party groups, the various social conservative groups, tend to have a sort of a stranglehold on the Republican Party here, as is true in some other states, especially in the South.
And the polls today, are people going out and voting?
Yes, but keep in mind they've been voting for the last couple of weeks. We have early voting here. And that could figure into the results here as well, because people have been listening, for example, since the debate last Thursday. There's been a lot of back and forth and a lot of, how should we put it, very low-level rhetoric between some of the candidates. And whether or not that'll have an impact, I guess we'll find out. But many of the people have already voted or had even voted before the debate. So they may have already been set and determined in who they had chosen. So the late voters or the voters that are coming today may vote in a different direction. We'll have to see.
And you're listening to VOA correspondent Greg Flakus in Houston, Texas, speaking with International Edition's Susan Yaki. The United Nations Refugee Agency is warning Europe that its refugee crisis is worsening as tens of thousands of people become stranded in Greece. Several Balkan states, along with Austria, have effectively closed their borders to the migrants. As Henry Ridgewell reports, aid agencies say migrant camps at Greece's border with Macedonia are overwhelmed.
Hundreds of migrants continue to arrive by the hour at the Greece-Macedonia border. Aid agencies estimate more than 8,000 people are camped at the frontier. Yusuf is from Damascus, Syria.
The situation was very bad, sir. We are here from 4 days. We had a swimming time last night. Our tent so wet, like our clothes. It was a very difficult night.
Greek authorities are building bigger camps away from the border, but the migrants are determined to press on toward Western Europe, and the pressure is building. Macedonia says it has been forced to close the frontier following similar moves by other Balkan countries further north. Police fired tear gas Monday after hundreds of migrants managed to breach the razor wire fence. Restrictions agreed to between Balkan states and Austria at a Vienna summit last week have been widely condemned. Andrej Mahecic is spokesperson for the UN Refugee Agency.
All of these measures have led to more suffering, more confusion and more anxiety among the people, many of whom have fled the conflict in Syria because more than half of the arrivals into Greece are Syrian refugees.
Mahecic says Europe is failing to fulfill the promises it made to help Greece.
Out of more than 66,000 places that have been agreed in the different summits in the course of last year for the European countries to take from Greece, only a handful, only about 325 relocations have actually taken place.
Meanwhile, on the shores of Greek islands, an average of 1,500 migrants arrive every day, 131,000 this year. The United Nations is warning that last year's crisis could be dwarfed by the numbers now starting to build on the borders of Europe. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
This is VOA.
Here's science in a minute.
A team of Dutch and American researchers have put a high-tech spin on the age-old art of fly fishing. The researchers have developed a new version of waders, those waterproof boots with pants used by fishermen to keep them dry as they wade through streams while fishing. These new high-tech waders have been equipped with temperature sensors to gather data that helps evaluate water quality and quantity. The wader sensors gauge water temperature and then sends the measurements via Bluetooth to an angler's GPS-equipped smartphone. According to the researchers, fishing enthusiasts would be able to immediately use this information to help them locate areas in the stream that are likely to have more fish. Meanwhile, the temperature data, along with the GPS-measured location, can be uploaded to the telephone where scientists can access it. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition with me, Michael Lippin. New data show Chinese manufacturing activity declined in February for a seventh month in a row. Two surveys, one official and the other private, show the state of manufacturing in the world's second largest economy is below 50, which signals a contraction. Both surveys also reveal a deteriorating Chinese job market as Beijing policymakers finalize their next five-year plan ahead of a parliamentary meeting on March 5th. Tim Condon, a chief economist for ING in Singapore, told VOA's Victor Beatty that China's ongoing slowdown is making it hard for Chinese policymakers to lower interest rates.
I think what it highlights is that authorities have not been able to ease policy as much as they probably would have. And I think that that is because of their concern that were they to ease policy, at least earlier this year, they would have intensified the depreciation pressure on their currency. And they did not want to do that.
Why not?
I think the simple answer to that is that it's very hard to get ahead of currency depreciation pressure. The currency depreciation pressure leads to capital outflows, and they've lost almost $1 trillion since the middle of 2014. They lost over $500 billion last year in foreign reserves. They don't want that to go on, and doing things that make people fear that a big depreciation is coming will lead them to try to hedge their exposure to the currency by selling it and buying dollars, and that's a drain on their foreign reserves that they don't want.
Well, this is the seventh consecutive month the official index showed a contraction in the manufacturing industry. Are we headed for some sort of recession in China?
I don't believe so. The manufacturing sector in China is suffering from the same thing that manufacturing globally is suffering from, which is the downturn global manufacturing activity. It seems as though the crash in commodity prices that began in the middle of 2014, the adverse impact of that on commodity producers outweighed the positive impact on commodity importers, and it had a chilling effect, a slowing effect on global manufacturing. China's suffering from that. Export growth in China was negative last year, so that hit them. They've got an ongoing correction in the housing market there, and that's the steepest on record as well. So it's kind of a double whammy to China's economy. They're doing what they can, short of aggressive monetary easing, to try to prop up growth. Fiscal policy is in play, structural reform is in play, and now I think what I would take away from the last couple of days is, in particular, the fact that the central bank did cut the commercial bank required reserve ratio. I think they're feeling a little bit less pressure on the exchange rate, and this giving them a little bit more freedom to put monetary policy into play to complement the other policies and try to prop up growth. It's a watching brief. At this point, we've got all indicators suggesting continuing slowdown, policy in play to prevent that and reverse that. My own feeling is that policies will work, and we'll see the economy beginning to bottom out and growth beginning to bottom out, and actually the economy beginning to perform better in the second half of the year.
And that was Tim Condon, chief economist for ING in Singapore, speaking with International Edition's Victor Beatty. Well, Thailand's capital is full of snakes, but they usually don't make the news until something particularly sensational occurs. Some snakes have been seen regurgitating a grown dog or emerging from a toilet and trying to drag a woman back down the drain. Well, VOA correspondent Steve Herman reports from Bangkok about the remarkable success of one Thai fireman who is committed to driving the annoying snakes out of the city.
Bangkok has a python problem. Thousands of times every year, the 199 hotline of the Bangkok Fire and Rescue Department rings with an urgent request to dispatch a snake wrangler. Over the past dozen years, fireman Pino Pupino has been responsible for clearing the city of more than 10,000 snakes.
They're prone to crawl into residences where animals are being raised, especially chickens, birds, or that have rodents. So you better keep your home tidy and your pets fenced because these snakes will eat them.
Most of the time, the wranglers respond to find non-venomous reticulated pythons in search of a meal. Since Pino has been on the job, the number of pythons in Bangkok has absolutely decreased, no small part, he claims, due to him single-handedly apprehending so many of them. Thousands of Thais annually are bitten by snakes, with a few dozen deaths. Those encountering deadly cobras should just slowly walk away or stay still.
Don't move.
Cobras do not chase humans, preferring to quietly follow their prey. Some species have their benefits, such as the copperhead rat snake, which helps keep Bangkok's rodent population in check.
Try to keep your house clean and prune your trees to keep them free of these critters.
At least twice a month, between 50 and 300 snakes, snared by wranglers from six fire stations, are taken far from the capital and released into the wild.
In Thailand, a Buddhist country, causing distress even to animals is kind of bad karma. So I'm convinced people would agree that releasing snakes like this is better than killing them.
And that is a perspective on which snake wrangler and cobra can see eye to eye. Steve Herman, VOA News, Bangkok.
And Steve Herman brings us to the end of this international edition on The Voice of America. Today's show was brought to you by director Tracy Carter and engineer Dan Crafton. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. Please reach out to us on Twitter. The show is at VOA_IE. You can find me on Twitter at Michael_Lippin, spelled L-I-P-I-N. Have a great week, and we'll see you soon.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The people of Malawi may soon have a significant increase in the electrical power they need, thanks to a new agreement between the United States government and the government of Malawi. Malawian Minister of Natural Resources, Energy and Mining, Bright Msaka, U.S. Ambassador to Malawi, Virginia Palmer, and Power Africa Coordinator Andrew Herskovitz signed a memorandum of understanding between the United States and Malawi regarding Malawi's continued participation in the U.S. presidential initiative known as Power Africa. Power Africa is a U.S. government-led initiative that helps bring critical power projects online and connects people to electricity by removing barriers, particularly the financial and regulatory roadblocks that have stood in the way of power delivery in sub-Saharan Africa. Power Africa represents the U.S. government's commitment to supporting Malawi to achieve its electrification goals and improve the quality of life for thousands of Malawians, said Ambassador Palmer at the signing ceremony. In Malawi, Power Africa support will complement an existing $350 million grant from the U.S. government through the Millennium Challenge Corporation, aimed at expanding access to electricity in Malawi. The United States is proud to partner with Malawi to help meet the country's electricity needs for a better future for the people of Malawi and Africa.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.